You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment. Very good, from the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's Game of Thrones After Show.
Hey guys, and welcome back to the Game of Thrones After Show, The Laws of Gods and Men. Thank you guys so much for joining us on this Mother's Day episode. Happy Mother's Day to Cersei Lannister, the best gift you could possibly get. But with us today, the tap dance expert of the crew, of the panel, Kristen Snyder.
1983, look it up.
One of the best I know. Actually, the only tap dance expert I know. But Kyle Maddock.
Hey guys. Glad to be back.
Hey guys, the lovely Anand Chiklis.
Hello everyone, happy to be back.
Hey guys, I'm Dave Klein. Thank you so much for joining us this week. And we should jump right into the episode because a lot happened, more so in the second half. As on the chat, we have people saying, basically the first half was people died and Theon got a bath. But let's go ahead and talk about that first half and the trial, which was kind of the big event we'll save for the end as we'll kind of go in order of the show. But let's go ahead and start off with Stannis and Davos, who are sailing to Braavos. And you can see right there one of the major landmarks of Braavos, which is that big statue that they have to sail underneath.
The Titan of Braavos, I believe. I don't think they called it that in the show, but that's what it is. It's the Titan of Braavos. Once again, good special effects. We had the Eyrie last week, and now we got this Titan. The city looked amazing. I think it was a cool introduction.
It did. It looks like the money comes from there.
Yeah, and with that perfect transition into the bank.
The Iron Bank.
Yes, they've been talking about it for weeks, and finally we get our introduction to three men in chairs. So that's the Iron Bank, I guess. It's these
guys. Just a bunch of iron chairs.
Yeah, well, I guess that's
but
how
we did
it is
get to
life.
Meet the members, too, in that it's a council. It's not just one person in charge, but it's a full council who's in charge of the Iron Bank as they're trying to make their case. And Davos really the one who's standing up for the case and kind of pointing out, well, you got to think about the future to the Iron Bank for a good investment as opposed to just the here and now.
Mm. You can see that this is a good example of how Stannis, there's so much he feels like he shouldn't have to do because he's the rightful king.
Yeah.
Even when they asked him to sit, it takes him like 5 minutes to even go, okay, I guess I can sit in front of these
men.
And then he had a presenter. And then when he lost his case, he was like, all right, well, I'm out of here. And it was like, it was Davos that stepped up. Everything's just, he's like, I'm not going to sit here and I'm not going to grovel. I'm not going to beg. He's like, that's not me. That's not what I'm going to do.
Yeah, well, on the other kind of flip side of that, you were talking about entitlement last week. Let's talk about entitlement with him and the fact that he had to have someone else pretty much make his case. How is he going to get anywhere if he literally needs someone else to not only fight his battles on the battlefield, but just in proving that he's a worthy king?
Mm. Yeah, that's a great point. He said nothing. And just the look on his face was like his credit card got declined. He's like, let's get out of here.
He didn't even reach in for another one, though. Or say, like, can I pay you in cash? Or can I write an IOU? He's like, well, ain't working. I'm just going to leave.
I mean, that was a long trip, too, to just be like, well, I'm not even going to try. I'm done.
Yeah, it was.
It was like he was in a trial as well.
Parallels.
I'm still curious how the Iron Bank enforces
their apparently laws. You just need a garden. Because they were like, do you have wheat to feed your men?
Oh, yeah.
Vegetables? No. Okay. No.
Yeah, I'm curious too, because we do keep on hearing, like, don't piss them off, but I'm curious, like, what they actually do if you piss them off.
We haven't seen an example of how they enforce that. Do they hire sellsword companies and just send them after somebody, or what do they do? Or?
The Golden Company. That's why they're called that.
Yeah?
That's not really why they're called that.
No.
It's because the Iron Bank has a lot of gold. So let's go ahead and move forth to that. We find out through Davos and Salador Sand talking that apparently this speech convinced them, as Salador Sand gets a nice big paycheck as he's in that bathhouse.
Without his wife.
Is the wife ever really there, though, in any of these circumstances?
Well, when it comes to a certain Sand Snake, Yes. Oh. Yes, the wife is there.
Yeah, it's true, true, true. But we've learned from a previous episode that Celador Sen has like a new wife every week, I think. An earlier one we had Davos talking about, he went to about 15 of Salador's weddings.
That's
like that.
Funny.
That's about right.
You can see Salador's a little hesitant about this, because the last time I believe he was under, when he was with Stannis, was the Battle of the Blackwater, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah,
and that didn't
right.
exactly go very well for the ships. And so I think Salador got out of there with his life, and now he's kind of, he's still in tow with Stannis. I mean, did he agree to this, or did Davos just come to him like, here's some money, you're mine again? Like,
it seemed like he was hesitant until he saw the gold, so I guess he doesn't want to be a poor pirate, so he knows the way to his heart.
I don't know.
Well, Lord Bond on the chat saying Stannis just isn't really a people person, so that could be. That's a lot of it here, as we're seeing. But
how are you going to be king?
Exactly.
He feels like that's all he has to say. He's like, I'm the rightful king.
Come on, this is because he's all about justice.
He doesn't have to give any other argument. He doesn't have to say anything else. That's all he feels like he has to say.
Yeah. So let's go ahead and transition over to Marine. Basically, and the reason I'm doing this is because Dizana asking on the chat if my opinion of the Mother of Dragons changed because it's Mother's Day. No.
Really, even after comparing that kind of entitlement, you cannot say that Stannis is not more entitled than Danny.
I'm not saying, but I've never said I liked Stannis.
Okay, that's fair.
The only reason that in the previous episode before you were here last week, I said I didn't like Daenerys is more so because people love her so much. I just have a counter opinion of her, and that's why I brought it up.
Mm. Okay.
But, no, yeah, I mean, Stannis isn't my favorite character either. Just anyone who acts entitled, I tend not to like, I suppose. But
he's such a likable guy.
Yeah, he's so totally. Well, at least he's just, I suppose, and like his own sense of justice. But anyways, let's go ahead and talk about.
I just don't like that he doesn't seem to hold firm to his own opinion. It's like he's easily swayed, and I don't think that's a good thing as a ruler. But continue.
Mm-hmm. Who's easily swayed?
Stannis.
He is.
It seems that way, like by Melisandre and then by Davos. Mm. It's like he can't have his own voice.
Okay. Well,
and speaking of that, something to point out too is that when we saw the sails on the sailing, you can very clearly see his new emblem, his new sigil, which we also saw during the Blackwater, but the heart and the stag inside the heart.
Yes.
So I thought that was a nice detail. But let's go ahead and move over to Essos and Meereen, where we've got we have Daenerys doing her own form of justice. She's dishing out justice as well, as she has to do her queenly duties. And this is really what a lot of you would do as a king or a queen, is meeting with the common people who have complaints or questions or things like that, and dishing out and talking to them. And we also saw this previously with the Starks, when we saw Bran needing to learn how to do this exact same thing in season one, I believe.
Yep.
So,
and I think we saw it once with Joffrey as well, and Joffrey's
just sitting
there, like he's like, "Oh, I hate you. All right, kill him."
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I guess that's an easy way to do it.
Yeah,
that's an easy way to get through 212 people.
Yeah, 212. Yeah.
Basically, it seemed like she was just fixing all the problems she's created unknowingly, like with her dragons. She has to now pay for what they're destroying, which I don't think is going to stop at goats. And she's also now realizing that all the men she had crucified, like the children, not all of them stood for what was happening for the slave children. They actually fought against it. So I think she's learning a lot as trying to be queen, which will obviously change what she's going to do moving forward.
Right. I mean, up until now, everything in her plotline has been, and I'll give you this, has been very kind of black and white when it comes to justice in her own way. I mean, she's the queen of the people, and she's fighting forward, and she's going to free all the slaves, and now this is kind of the time where she is sitting down and realizing that things are a lot more shades of gray in this area, and if she is going to rule, she's going to have to, and she wants to do it properly, and give her that, at least she wants to do it properly, it's going to be a little difficult, because how do you rule a kingdom? It's not just as easy as, oh, you have to be just all the time. What's justice when you have, you know, children being nailed to crosses and then you try to give them justice and you realize that there's no way to do that? It's very complex. It's not easy. There's a reason that people come and go off of the throne all the time, not only in the world of Westeros, but in actuality. So it's just kind of her discovering.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's a huge.
She's been like very one-sided up until this point. And I feel like as an audience, we've only been getting that one side, which perhaps is why Dave doesn't necessarily love her. But we're just getting how she sees things. We're not getting the people's explanation for why the things are happening in these cities or appear certain ways.
So Lord Bond on the chat saying Danny got a taste of what ruling is in this episode. It's not all dragons and rainbows. Decisions have consequences. But go ahead.
Well, I was about to say something about puppy dogs and rainbows. Oh. So I got to do it.
But Lord Bond stole it.
Damn you, Lord Bond. Damn you. No. But it's true. It's just such a wake-up call. And we have been seeing the one side. It's like she's been trying to free slaves. And I think we can all agree we don't like slavery. And so we're all like, yeah, Danny, except for Dave. And and then all of a sudden she gets it and she's like, you know what? I'm going to stay here. I'm going to figure this out. And she finds out that it's so much more complicated than just freeing mm-hmm. slaves. When you try to change the infrastructure of anything, and when an entire city, an entire way of life, mm-hmm. and when you shake that foundation, there's going to be a lot of issues that you have to deal with.
Well, it is interesting to see where things are going to go to, because we've got the dragons here that are causing issues with the goats. And as you said, that might not stop there. I mean, who knows where that's going to go to as they only get bigger. And like that was just one day, of, yeah. you know, meal, and as far as we know. And then Hasdar bringing up that point about his father being crucified when he actually spoke against crucifying the children. And Dany kind of seemed like she didn't want to hear it because it's kind of a hard pill to swallow. But it seemed like she just didn't want to accept that maybe she did something wrong, I suppose. And I'm not saying that's a very human thing. I'm not saying that's necessarily against her. It's a very human thing not to want to feel that way. But kind of realizing why maybe harsh justice isn't always the right way to go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she had this sort of blanket justice and finding out that it doesn't, one answer doesn't exactly apply to everybody you're raining that punishment down on is really kind of opened her eyes.
Yeah, and it's a bit of a learning curve. I mean, not to say that you should have a learning curve when you're dealing with ruling a kingdom. It's not exactly like a trial by error type thing. But when you look at her story, her plot line up until now, the things that she's had to deal with have pretty much toughened her up. I mean, there's the whole, I do not have a gentle heart. Yeah, you do. But which is why people tend to gravitate towards her. But I'm totally messing with you. But no, there's... but like I was saying, she, up until now, it has been necessary for kind of emotional toughness to be a key part of everything that she's been doing. So when she is confronted with this, I would imagine that she hears this kind of thing all the time, or if she's starting to hear this thing, she can't automatically just go, okay, you know, take down your father from the cross, because it's a little more complicated than that. But the fact that she did budge kind of leads me as a storyteller to believe that they're trying to make her seem like, all right, she's taking in all this information. She's Definitely. Realizing what she has to do, and now she's going to do it.
Right, but I do think that's a good point that, yeah, you, especially at a time of war, you kind of have to harden yourself because there's atrocities on either side, no matter what way you look at it.
Yeah, and you want the people, at the end of the day, they have to fear you in order to follow you.
Ooh.
That way, don't let Kristen be a ruler.
Wow.
That's what I'm finding out.
Rule through fear. Okay, I see how it is.
I mean, that's just how these worlds work.
Oh. Do these worlds work that well, though?
I'm not saying that works well. I'm not saying that's how I rule. Okay. Just saying. The show's rules. I'm an observer here.
To Danny's credit, I gotta say, I think you could argue that she knew some of this was coming, and that was her decision. She's like, I can't rule seven kingdoms if I can't even rule this one. I've got to figure out how to deal with these problems. And I think you could certainly make a case that this is what she was expecting, that she was expecting the unexpected of what problems do I have to solve? What do I do? And she knew something was, there was a bumpy road ahead.
What I found kind of funny is when she said, you have 212, it was 212, right? You have 212 of these, more of these. And she kind of was like, oh boy. What was funny to me is I think you're right. She was expecting this kind of thing, but it almost reminded me of someone like a superhero trapped in like an office and not knowing how to deal with like all of the work.
It's
really funny. It's like what I have to do for 212 more of these. Damn it.
It's like The Incredibles.
Kind of.
Like Mr. Incredible.
Yeah, and Jorah kind of was on that same par of thinking that you just mentioned, because he was just like, really, this is what you want to do. We could have just left.
Yeah. We could have been, like, going and conquering, and instead we're listening to all, like, your goats and this and that. It is necessary, 100%, but it was just a funny moment when she heard 212.
Yeah, it was nice eye roll, too.
Yeah, Jorah was like,
So D-Zon on the chat, by the way, saying, damn, Kristen, about ruling with power.
Ooh, I know.
No, what I'm saying is, like, if she says, hang up all these men, and then she is like, okay, we can take a few down, like, it makes her look weak.
Yeah.
So Simfire on the chat saying, didn't Joffrey think that fear equals respect? I don't think he really knew what he was doing, per se. No. I think he was just cruel.
He was just sadistic.
Yeah. He didn't have a creed. He was just going with the flow.
I mean, the way they present her, mother of dragons. Like, are you really don't think they want people to fear her?
Can we also point out how long her title was, too? That title went on for a long time.
I love it. We got a lot of titles, especially even between Sannis and the Iron Bank. Mm-hmm. It was he's the Lord of the Andals and protector of the realm. And he goes, well, Tommen's the Lord. He's the Void Protector.
That's the kind of introduction I asked for.
Oh, I'm sorry.
First of her name.
There you go.
The greatest
tap dancer of 1983.
I mean, first you wanted your like hot dog competition exploits to be shared with the world.
They can YouTube it.
So let's go ahead and move forward with that to Yara Greyjoy and heading off to the Dreadforts to free Theon. So this is something pretty new, but it makes I feel like they were doing this to make you like her character a lot more.
I didn't know what to think of this scene. Could you guys give me something? I feel like this scene was. I was really looking forward to this scene from the season finale of last season.
Yeah.
Where she was like, I'm going to take the fastest ships and the best killers on the Iron Islands, and we're going to go, and I'm going to do this because you won't, Daddy, Balon Greyjoy. And then we get this little kind of scene where they...
We're on a rowboat.
There's
10 people.
Dogs.
Not that killer dogs aren't bad. It's like this.
The worst part was that they watched him take out the key and unlock the dog door. Like, you have him surrounded by 10 of your men. You can't kill him before he opens up the cages. Like, what are you doing? We all could have stopped him. We could have jumped through the screen before she did anything.
He was looking
like
pretty scary with no shirt and all cut up.
What was that from?
He's a masochist.
Yeah, I know we discussed. I know we were kind of discussing this while we were watching the episode, but did he get scratched up? Is that someone else's blood? Did he kill the girl he was having sex with?
I was so confused when
that
happened.
Really,
I was like, why is he? What is this?
I feel like we had a deleted scene where he probably ran to the kennels and killed a few Greyjoys along the way or something.
Yeah, killed somebody.
You're asking what to make of the scene. I mean, for my money, it was pretty much a device just to say, or not even a device. She needed to realize that Theon isn't Theon, or is he going to turn into Theon, I suppose, again?
How meta is that? I need you to pretend to be Theon.
Oh, that is pretty meta. That's terrible. That's a great way to... That's the best kind of disguise I could ever think of, though. Brainwashing someone into not thinking that they're them and then asking them to play themselves.
It's probably going to work, too.
So Ramsay's pretty brilliant.
But kind of. That's really brilliant in a sick, twisted way. But, yeah.
Yeah.
Cheaper than makeup, I suppose.
Whenever Theon was in that bath, I was thinking if Ramsay asked Theon to drown himself in that moment, he probably would. That's what I was thinking, because at this point, I feel like he can command him to do anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, I guess, like, for me, I felt like it was 2 points for the whole scene. One was to show just how much he's turned to the point where Ramsay can't control him. And then the other point was just to show, I think, to make the characters, to make us as an audience like Yara more. And because she was kind of harsh, in a way, when we first met her. And... kind of. I think she's less so in the show than she is in the book with Theon, in a way. But I feel like it was to, I mean, again, make us sympathize with her and like her.
I mean, I don't, though. I liked her on the way. I liked her after that speech that you mentioned. But on the way back, she's like, my brother's dead, you know, because they were like, what about your brother? And she's like, my brother's dead. So it's like, you don't ever turn your back on your family. And
Yara just did.
Exactly.
He just bit her.
They could have carried him out screaming and crying. Like, you went all that way. You charged through there. Like, really? You're going to come back empty-handed? Like, why?
Her feelings could have been hurt. Her brother didn't recognize her.
I think as far as she's concerned, her brother really is dead. He's just gone. He's completely gone. And I think I agree with you that I believe that's the main point of this scene. I just felt bad for the Ironborn because those are supposed to be the best killers on the Iron Islands. They didn't put up much of a fight. No. So if that's the case, then they're in rough shape.
They're referring to the dogs.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, dogs. Just don't bring out dogs and they're okay. Sinfire saying Yara's speech was pretty good and the cinematography during it was decent too.
Mm. Her speech was really kind of revved up when she was rowing in.
By the way, those were all like kind of like, I don't know, that was like a strange compliment. It was pretty good, and the cinematography during it was decent. It's just like, you're trying to compliment it, it's like, but then it's all like these terms that are...
Nice. Ish,
yeah.
I guess.
Ish, yeah, I guess it was good.
Man, we're such critics.
How about how easy the Dreadfort was to break into? What was up with that? That's the main castle of the Boltons.
They're good at torturing people, not at defending themselves.
Not at defending themselves,
it's
okay.
Only, it's a place built for torture. That's all it's good at. Mm. So with that, let's go ahead and get to what I think everyone is looking forward to from this episode, and the big moment from this episode, which is King's Landing, where we get a scene with Jaime and pissed at Lord Tywin. So basically about everything happening with Tyrion, and Jaime's really on Tyrion's side, and Jaime's just pissed that Tywin's doing this to his own son.
Mm. Yeah.
It's so nice to see the bond between them. We've seen Tyrion just have like his father and his sister hate him for so long. That is so nice to see a relative that actually cares about him. It's a nice turn.
Or anyone care about him?
I completely.
Well, Shay cared about him.
Oh, don't even. Bring her
I mean,
she is
that.
Dead.
She loved him. She loved him. Tyrion pushed her away, and for good reason. But yeah.
Are we talking about
that? We'll talk about that. We'll talk about it in a moment.
What are we talking about?
Let's keep on talking about Jaime and how I agree. It's nice to see someone in the family actually protecting Tyrion, or not that he needs protection, but someone who actually caring about him. Because usually it's just Tyrion constantly gets shit on by everybody. So it's nice to see that from Jaime and how much Jaime's really trying to change and make an effort to be good.
Are you talking about after the trial?
No, even before the trial, when he's like talking to Lord Tywin, and he's just like, "How could you do this to your own son? How could you condemn him to death?" And Tywin opening up and saying, I'm like, wait, let me make sure I'm like, oh, never mind, I'm actually on the wrong note. I was
David's
like,
just going right into this trial.
Like, that's
I'm sorry. I was like, I mixed up my notes. I'm sorry.
No, that's all right.
But before that, that's rewind.
Can we talk about the small council meeting?
Let's talk about the small council meeting. Tywin meeting with the council with Oberyn, and also we get to see Martell there.
Yeah, Oberyn Martell, first Martell. Day on the council. Only one who doesn't stand up when the hand of the king enters is like...
He's so cool.
Sinfire was saying... Oh, by the way, in the previous note, Sinfire was saying, Dave, my tone was more upbeat. I don't know. It's just funny when you actually read what the words actually mean. Nice.
There is no tone in typing.
Psychologically, you always read texts and emails more snarky than they are. They did a study on it, apparently.
Agreed.
That's why I always put smiley faces or exclamation marks.
Yeah, I do the
or
same
ha-ha
thing.
Or ha-ha if you put ha-ha after basically
everything.
Anything, it's okay. You can say vicious things, but ha-ha-ha, and you're fine.
I try to do the same thing just so people know. But yeah, sorry, let's get to the small council. So what were you saying?
So we're getting a bunch of word. Varys has a lot of new information to bring on. First of all, the Hound has been sighted. They're talking about the five men that they killed, that Arya and him killed over the chicken in the in the hut. And we find out that they put a bounty on the Hound's head. And 10 should be enough. And Tywin's like, no, 100 gold to kill the Hound. So I think that's going to lead
to
some...
Was it gold? I thought it was like 10 silver stags.
Oh, was it silver stags? I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
I mean, it's fine. It's not a big... I don't think it matters that much. It's 10 to 100. That's the important detail.
He offers 100 something to kill the Hound.
It's like, why? Why is Tywin putting that much out?
Because he said, fuck the king.
Yeah.
And also, he's deadly, and he knows a lot. Okay. I mean, if you think about it.
Yeah.
He might not necessarily be that much of a threat to him, but he has enough threats going on as it is. He just wants that out of the question. Kill him. Kill him good. Make sure that he can't say anything. He can't kill anyone. And now that he said, fuck the king...
What's funny is the Hound said in the next that he sees Arya as like a walking bag of silver or whatever, and now it's kind of like she could turn him in, and he's basically a walking bag of silver now.
Absolutely, he's got a
twist.
He's a marked man now.
Twist. They're both.
But, I think he mainly wants him dead because he's a deserter. He ran out on the Lannisters in the middle of a battle.
You can't let that stand. And that's Tywin. He's very firm. He rules with an iron fist.
Absolutely.
But and we find out that they actually now are getting a lot of info about Daenerys and Meereen. And this is like a lot of info. So they know now about the Unsullied, the Second Sons, the Three Dragons. And they're actually taking the dragon somewhat seriously. And they're actually acknowledging that these are real.
It's great, except for Cersei, who...
Three baby dragons.
I'm so glad she's not in charge, because...
yeah.
She's just clueless. Care. She doesn't care. Oh, whatever. Baby dragons, little
she's
girl.
She's just arrogant. That's so arrogant.
That's exactly how Joffrey would have responded. Like, who cares, though? So
like the apple doesn't fall far from the tree.
Oh, yeah. Man.
But what is he going to do? Get me a quill and paper? Like, the dragons are going to burn that up in seconds for a snack. Like, what? The birds aren't going to make it there with what's this paper going to say? Yeah. What's, like, Tywin's big plan here?
I suppose they don't know how to handle dragons. I mean, when's the last time a dragon's been around?
Yeah, it's been like hundreds of years.
It's been hundreds of years, so I guess they don't really know how to deal with that imminent threat because no one has had to for hundreds of years.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, even more than that, though. They've got 8,000 Unsullied, too, and we've got the Second Sons. You got the two advisors, and again, Cersei, like, oh, well, Barriss didn't sell him. He doesn't matter. He was old and trying to defend her own decision, where you got the, once again, Tywin with reason being like, no, he's, that was a mistake. That was really dumb.
Yeah. And we also get reminded that Jorah was a spy originally.
Yeah.
Which they haven't mentioned, I don't think, since the first season.
I think they mentioned that in the third season?
Did they?
Last season? I think they mentioned that.
But they brought that back up, which is something so easy to forget, that he was originally sent there to spy on her.
Yeah, and so he stopped at this point.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah. Hmm. But yeah, so that kind of wraps up the scene as Oberyn quips on how the Unsullied are great warriors, but in bed, not so much.
Not so much. And we have Mace Tyrell so happy to please Lord Tywin.
Yeah,
like, I'll go get it, yeah.
Lord Bond saying the small council meeting was great. Seeing Mace Tyrell and Oberyn be total opposites. Mace being the brown noser, sitting up nice and proper, and Oberyn kicked back and just looked being all badass.
He just looked badass. Just the posture.
It's
like,
just great. He just doesn't even care to be there, too. It's just like, I'm here.
But you could see the entire time he was really listening. Because this is first small council meeting, and now he's getting all these secrets that Dorne has never heard of. Mm-hmm. All this, like, does Dorne know about Daenerys out there? Did they know that before? And just everything. You could see he was really paying attention to everything that was being said.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I just like how he kind of throws it away that people probably aren't going to take him serious like that. Like, he's going to do anything with this information because he is so, like, laid back and whatever. Yeah, I was out last night. These meetings always going to be early. Like, he almost comes across as a non-threat to be in those meetings.
Yeah.
Because he acts so carefree like that, but honestly, he is listening to all that stuff, and I'm sure he will do something with that information.
It's definitely a great way to portray that he's a lot smarter than he allows himself to come across. Mm-hmm. He actually is really smart, but we get him meeting, and then actually, speaking on that, we get a meeting with Varys, and him right away recognizing that Varys had been hiding an accent the whole time is actually from
Lys.
Lys, thank you. Yeah, from Lys, so... We also get that apparently Varys kind of nods at that he might be going for the Iron Throne.
Yeah, what? Just like Peter Baelish, he says that whole thing about the absence of desire leaves one free to pursue other things. And then he like looks over at the throne.
But doesn't that mean he desires the throne?
That's
the implication.
Wait a second.
Wait a minute, Mari.
Different types of desires.
Yeah, I guess so. Not sins of the flesh, but sins of the iron throne. I
prefer the flesh version than the iron.
That was interesting exchange. I don't fully know what to take from that. Did you guys think that he's just gunning to put himself on the Iron Throne?
I feel weird about the fact that he said anything to this guy he doesn't know. He's so smart socially. It does not make sense to me that he would drop something with that kind of
show
his cards that freely when he's played everyone else so well up until now. Why would he just throw his cards on the table to this guy who is clearly very intelligent, clearly sees through him a little bit? That just doesn't sound right to me. I feel like there's something else.
He's obviously trying to manipulate Oberyn into thinking something. Mm-hmm. I don't know, putting an idea in his head, maybe the desire for the throne. I don't know.
It's like a double blind. Like he's trying to point attention over here while he's doing something
with
his
left
hand.
It's like what we get Peter Baelish doing. He's like, confuse all your friends and your enemies and everybody, so nobody knows anything.
Varys is confusing us, so I think he's got us beat right now.
Varys, winner. So let's go ahead and move forward to the trial. So we get Tyrion being led off to the trial in chains because he's such a threat without chains on. We saw what he did in the Battle of the Blackwater. Can't let that be unleashed.
He is perfect. I'm sorry. He's the other one. He's my favorite character.
Oh, yeah. Tyrion's amazing. But
he's all right.
Now we're going to have to.
He's so entitled.
Let me just throw out, just say that I hate Tyrion so everyone hates me even more.
Wow.
No, I love Tyrion. I love Tyrion. Don't take that seriously. So, but Tommen, again, with the titles that you're talking about, Tommen saying all of his titles now, with the long list of titles as he releases himself.
Excuse me?
he relieved himself on the spot. Look, if you ever read the books, for some reason George R. R. Martin has it so if anyone's scared, they piss their pants so many times. The more scared you are, you pee your pants like four times. This is for everyone. I'm sorry. This is just something I noticed when I'm like, why are they always, they're constantly pissing their pants?
There you go.
That's an aside.
It's like the Salador San joke we got earlier.
Yeah.
The brown pants. Yeah.
So anyway, regardless, sorry for the aside. But regardless, we get, so Tommen releases himself from the trial. I just want to say releases himself.
He likes the
Freudian slip.
He likes the crown, but apparently not the throne. He's just easily giving up his power.
I mean, it's just like that whole thing with Tywin, who said listen to your counselors and all that from the previous episode. He's clearly just listening to what Tywin wants. Mm-hmm. And he's also probably, he might not even be of age in a sense, but I guess he is if he's even able to say that. So he's probably just listening to what Tywin wants him to do.
Yeah, I mean, he had that whole speech about, you know, if you're a wise king, you'll listen to the people who actually know what they're talking about. So I'm sure as a young kid, he's just going, yes, dad, or grandpa.
Yeah.
Really, what's Tommen supposed to do anyway? Is he going to oversee that trial? Like what?
It would be interesting, though, to see what he would say.
He'd be like, did you murder him? Oh, a kitty.
Joffrey would have overseen it, and with pleasure.
Oh, yeah.
He would have been the only one overseeing it.
Mm.
So, yeah, Tyrion, and we get, I was just thinking, like, it's got to be so infuriating to be Tyrion in this situation. I think that's a lot of why, like, it's so easy to like him is because he's put into situations like this and you just constantly feel horrible for the things that he has to sit through and how infuriating it is to listen to all these people. Like the first person who spoke out against him, which was the king's guard.
Sir Meryn Trant.
Sir Meryn Trant, thank you. Yeah, Sir Meryn Trant, who just starts speaking out and without any context. And he's speaking in truth, but without context of what happened. So Tyrion tries to speak out against it, not able to immediately shut down, just has to listen to all these things being spoken about him.
Mm.
Do you guys feel like this was at all like a mockery of like our judicial system? Because often people are, you know, they're not really assumed to be innocent until proven guilty. I mean, this is often, I feel like, how trials could go.
Yeah, it's there's so much that you can take. Like, you can tell a story, and like Dave was saying, if it's out of the context, you can make up any sort of anything you want. Any sort of truth.
Yeah,
the court of public opinion.
That is how reality TV is edited. Absolutely.
I would say that it's less of a commentary on specifically maybe the United States' judicial system and maybe a commentary on justice in general. Because if you're getting into the specifics, it's held in such a different way that it's really kind of difficult to make parallels. Mm-hmm. But the truth about justice in general, be it in the United States or any other country, really is there are three sides to every story, yours, mine, and the truth. And taken out of context, anything that anyone says can be manipulated depending on who's in power. It can be manipulated. So I would say it's less of a commentary maybe on specifically the United States judicial system and more about just the concept
general
of
justice.
Yeah, because I mean, here you have Tyrion not even allowed to speak out against anything. He's not allowed to counter an argument. He's not allowed to say anything to like counter what they say. He doesn't have anyone helping him out. He's kind of on his own. So I mean, I don't know. I don't at all put it side by side with the way the American justice system works because it's so different how trials work.
Does he have any defense at all? Like, is there any point where he can speak? Like, if they don't call him to the stand, can he tell his side of the story?
I mean, apparently they said that he was allowed to speak at the end if he wanted to.
Okay.
Yeah, and also he could choose his...
and he could find witnesses of his own.
But everyone left.
Yeah.
So.
Right, he doesn't have any witnesses.
And he wasn't allowed to talk to anyone before the trial, obviously.
Yeah, because he's in prison, so it's kind of hard to... Yeah.
Well, like Jamie said, it's a farce.
Yeah.
It's a farcical trial. It's not really a trial, but we kind of realize that there are other pieces at play, I suppose, when it comes to whether or not he's going to actually kill him or if he had designs to kill him.
Yeah, definitely. Tyrion is saying that this is kind of the truth from only one point of view that we're seeing in this trial, Cersei's point of view.
Yes, this is all orchestrated by Cersei.
Yeah, this kind of goes back to last week how we were anticipating she would be manipulating the entire trial, and it seems like she did.
Yeah. And for some reason, Grandmaester, Pycelle. I don't know why, but he's mad at Tyrion for some reason and is speaking out against him. I can't imagine what reason. Why would he possibly dislike Tyrion?
He caught him doing his maester's aerobics and stuff like that and threw him in jail. But we do see Grandmaster Pycelle actually finally, and I've been wondering about this for a couple weeks now. He finally brought out the necklace from Dantos. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, because
they had a very deliberate scene when Sansa made it to Littlefinger's ship of Littlefinger pushing the necklace over the boat and it falling onto Dantos. And they had a very deliberate shot of it. And then it kind of disappeared for 2 or 3 weeks. And I was really wondering if it was going to show up again. And I'm glad that they finally had it reemerge. And they did, in fact, discover Dantos' body and this necklace and the poison. And I thought that was going to be more implicating Sansa to it, but I guess it's implicating both of them now because they're married.
Well, if you watch very closely in the scene where he's murdered, you actually see, you can figure out who did it. If you look very, very closely.
Well, I think they explained last week who did it.
Yeah,
They did. I'm like trying to avoid because I know that I could. I mean, I have not read the books. I don't know the spoilers. All I know is what I've actually watched.
I gotcha.
If you look at the, if you count the number when you're watching that episode, at some point one of those disappears. Is all I'm saying.
We discussed that.
Queen of Thorns like had played with her necklace and kind of.
When it happened, Sarah and Chris who hadn't read the books, were like, wait, we need to rewind to see what happened. And they actually rewound it and caught that without having read anything. So that was something that you could watch and see. And then I agree, they kind of explained that last week too.
Yeah, but I'm just glad that King's Landing knows about Dantos and this necklace now.
Yeah,
I thought he was just going to be out there floating with Gendry somewhere, like out in the middle of the ocean.
I am glad they made a point of that, too. They actually had that scene for a reason.
Where is Gendry?
I don't know. Where is Gendry? That's a great point. Like, where did he go? Like, it seemed like they made it ask like he's going to be really important, and now he's just kind of gone from the face of the earth.
And we see on the previously on, I think every single clip was pretty much Tyrion saying something in a previous season about threatening the king. And I feel like every single previously on was what each person that got called to the stand was talking about.
Yeah, so
word for word. Like, so, he's going to kill the king, and kings are dropping like flies these days.
I'm kind of wondering what people are thinking about when Varys came up to speak against Tyrion, if anyone was expecting that, for Varys to actually be one who would... I mean, I guess, like, we found out in a previous season when he wanted Varys on his side, and we found out in a previous week, but I'm wondering, like, Varys and especially Shay, if people were seeing that coming.
I just felt like Varys was doing it because he had to keep up appearances, and obviously all those people were doing the same thing. And Shay, it's like at first I wanted to think that she was like forced to do this, but after thinking about it and after listening to her, I think this is just like her revenge on him.
That broke my heart.
Oh. I think it broke his too.
He snaps, and kind of a callback earlier to... when they're discussing desire and what it does to people and what it does to countries, that moment he snaps, and it's over her, really, because he's taken it for so many years, and the final straw that kind of broke him was the person that he loved.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Completely turning her back on him after he was really desperately trying to save her and do what was best for her. And so when it comes to what desires will do to men and countries, well, there's a perfect example, so kind of a little tie-in.
Yeah.
When she showed up, did you think she was going to say something to kind of help him? Because that's...
My naive self totally did.
I was, like, scared for her. I was like, oh, no, she's going to say something to defend him, and then she's going to die. But that never happened.
So, by the way, before I talk about that whole thing, I do want to point out, I thought it was great that Marcella... is so bored during the trial.
Wait, Marcella?
Marjorie. I'm sorry.
Marcella's back.
Sorry.
All right.
Marjorie, yeah. I'm sorry. People are going to be mad at me for saying that. She was so bored. I thought that was great. Or she seemed so...
Do you think she looked bored? I thought her and Loras kind of were like, what is happening?
I thought it looked like she was just... I don't know.
I didn't think she was bored. I thought she was like, obviously this isn't true, and this is the family that I'm marrying into, and this is how something would go, and they're... obviously trying to convince everyone to kill their own brother is on trial in front of all these people who don't matter. So it's like, to me, I think she was just kind of ashamed for them.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I think you're right.
Especially because it was last week when her grandma? Mom?
Yeah,
grandma. Lady Grandma. Yes.
Grandmother.
Grandma
yeah.
said, it was me, pretty much.
So she knows.
And so she knows. And so she's watching this, and she's like, wow, this is not how
that's
it actually
a good point.
Went. Like, she's the only one there who really knows what happened.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Or so we all think.
But I thought her reactions were great.
Yeah.
Regardless. So, yeah, and then we get the recess where now this is the part where Jamie's pissed off at Lord Tywin.
Wait, can I mention something more about Shay?
I was going to talk about Shay.
Yeah, all
right,
yeah. Let's go.
So, because there's the recess where we get the fact that, because this is going to play into Shay and what happens with that, but that Jamie agrees that if Tywin will let Tyrion live, he'll take over Castle Rock, he'll leave his vows and all of that. And then it sounds like this is what Tywin's been planning all along. Was just to send Tyrion into the wall.
He's like, great, we're going to do X, Y, and Z.
Well, it's not that he wanted to send Tyrion to the wall as much as he wanted Jaime to be his heir, I think. That's exactly what he wanted to hear. Because as soon as he was like, yeah, okay, whatever, with that son, yes.
It sounds like he was ready for it, though. He's just ready to go, like, right away. Okay, well, this is what we're doing.
Yeah, he had it all planned out, and then Jaime just played right into his hands. And it was like, Jaime you just saw that look on Nikolai's face where he's just like,
Oh, God.
My dad's so smart, and I'm so stupid. What am I doing?
It's like, oh, hey, I've decided we're going on a road trip, and someone going, oh, great, here's your suitcase, we're going.
Yeah, exactly.
Everything that you were prepared to pack. It's like, what? Obviously, you knew. Either you knew or you planned something like this.
So Tyrion knows now. Jaime conveys this info to Tyrion. So Tyrion now knows if he confesses to be guilty that he will live. Period. He's going to get to live and go to the wall. Even though Tyrion doesn't totally trust his father and Tywin, he still finds out that that's possibly an option on the table. And then we come to Shay.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I was totally in that moment like, yeah, Jon Snow's going to have another bromance. That's going to be awesome.
Were you guys picturing Tyrion up at the wall?
I was. I was like, he's going to be like commanding stuff and everyone's going to be listening to him and maybe now they have a chance at the wall and that's where we need the protection.
What do you think his role at the wall would be? I feel like he wouldn't be.
I feel like
he'd do good in the yard.
That's a good point. I feel like he'd definitely have to earn it because he would be now he wouldn't have any protection saying like I'm royal or whatever. And then he really just is a dwarf. So I think it would take time. But obviously, I just saw that. You know, I know his abilities. We all know what he's capable of. So I just saw him like prevailing and being like someone needed and necessary at the wall.
Mm. Yeah,
that'd be cool.
But. Didn't
that's
happen.
Insane.
Yeah.
So
never mind.
So I thought this was so this
dream
is,
crusher.
There you go.
So this is kind of a thing, and I talked before how all of Shay's scenes were different in this show than the book, and this is kind of what it was all leading up to. Because in the show, you never get Shay, you never get Tyrion spiting Shay like he did in the show in the books, and Shay never comes across as like. As being, you never are really certain if Shay's actually in love with Tyrion or not in the book. And you never even get this statement of Tyrion trying to send Shay off. That doesn't happen in the book either. So when she actually says this, your real thought and instinct is, wow, she is a lying whore from the book. And now here they've given this completely different motive to make you sympathize with her. So it's just, I think it's safe to reveal that info at this point because that's why they did that. So that's why it is different how they built up Shay's character in the show to make you sympathize and be like, okay, well, this is why she has this motivation.
They were in love. Yeah,
right.
Absolutely. But just the fact that Shay's there is my question.
Yeah.
The last we saw, Bronn had sent her off, told Tyrion that she was gone.
Bronn's like, it's all good, bro. She's gone. Don't worry.
So we have Shay all of a sudden there, and Bronn is not there. Is there something... I'm genuinely asking, like, do we think that Bronn betrayed Tyrion? Like, that's what's going through my mind. Did that happen?
I don't think Bronn betrayed him. I think he wasn't allowed to be around Tyrion because they know he was faithful to him. As, like, they previously had stated, he wasn't allowed to see him. But I think that Shay has obviously always played by her own rules. So if she was on that ship for a mile, she probably jumped off and swam back and was planning this revenge, you know? And I don't know. All she'd have to do is go to Cersei. I mean, it seemed like Cersei kind of knew. They had that angle on her where she was just, like, smiling and just, like, so happy that she was getting what she wanted out of this trial. Mm-hmm. And it's as if, like, she kind of had a part in Shay coming back, so it seemed to me. So
kind of obscure reference, but all I was thinking during that entire scene was she reminded me of Mama from Dread. which is a movie she was in.
Ah, yes.
And I was like, oh my God, it's Mama from Dread.
Just take some slow-mo.
Yeah.
That was an awesome movie, by the way.
I love Dread. It's such a great movie. But Lord, anyways, Pizana on the chat saying, kind of agreeing with your opinion, Kristen, saying Bronn is too loyal to Tyrion, but doesn't mean that Shay stayed on the boat. And so that idea that maybe Shay got to the boat but didn't stay, and Lord Bond is saying Bronn would do anything for the right price, though. Even told Tyrion he would kill a baby for the right price.
Mm-hmm. He is a sellsword.
Yeah. At the end of the day.
And I think I felt like I saw Cersei just kind of being a puppet master that whole trial. Like, yeah. I feel like she was just sitting back and she was like, yes, they're saying everything I want them to say. Perfect. Like, that's the impression that I got from it.
She had the time of her life.
She was so happy with herself.
That look was just like, oh, checkmate.
Yeah.
But I didn't think she was surprised at all by Shay. That's why I feel like maybe she had a hand in it.
Yeah, absolutely. Maybe.
All I know is that the look on his face when she walked in destroyed me. I'm like sitting there with my little notepad, like, trying not to cry because I don't know you guys that well. That was awful.
So what you're saying is by next week, though, the tears will be flowing.
Tears
will
be
flowing.
If he goes down, yes. If Tyrion goes down, you will see waterworks for me like no one's seen for me in a long time. I will not stand for that.
I think you're tearing up right now.
Tyrion, the heat in here.
Tyrion dies, and Shay runs over, and she's like, I'm sorry. And Autumn just...
Oh, no,
I'll
just
burst through the TV.
God, Kyle, stop with the spoilers.
Oh, sorry, spoilers. I'm just writing my fan fiction.
Just on a performance level, I'm a really big fan of Peter Dinklage in general. I think he's wonderful, and I think that he's incredibly subtle and nuanced, and there were a few moments in that entire scene where I was just like...
He did a fantastic job acting.
When he asked her at the end, he's like, please don't. That's when I almost lost a little bit. But did he just win the Emmy right there?
I think so. That was fantastic acting in that whole scene. Well, that entire scene, too. Like, just the way that he's sitting there taking everything, you can just read what he's feeling from it. And, yeah, Peter Dinklage did a fantastic job. But, yeah, that speech was great. Mm. I love that speech.
He broke. Go. He finally broke.
It's what everyone's been thinking, too. Everyone's been thinking this. Not just him. All the viewers have been thinking this.
So it was kind of like any way we could get justice was in his words right then and there.
It was good. He's just like, I wish I had poison to kill you all. Yeah. You should all be thanking me.
I'll confess, I saved you, and I saved all of you worthless people.
And I'm on trial for something a lot worse.
I should have let you die.
Monstrous. I'm on trial for being a dwarf.
Do you think that's what it all is?
Yeah.
Is it all because he's different?
I mean, that's exactly how he feels.
Yeah.
That's maybe not why everybody else looks at him that way, but I don't know. That's obviously, it's like that one thing when you look in the mirror that you want to change about yourself. You kind of will probably blame everything that doesn't work out in your life on that one detail that you see when you look in the mirror. And I think that's kind of what he's doing here. Maybe it's not so much that he's a dwarf, but that's how he sees himself. And
that being said, he's not delusional. I mean, we've known from season one that his father hates him. And it's not because he lacks the talent and wit, where if he were a normal person, quote unquote, in this world, that he would have been made a fine king.
Yeah, well, I mean, beyond that, too, is the fact that
his mom died
when it came out. So that's a lot of it for Tywin, too. That's big part of it, too. But, yeah, I just love that his whole thing about, I'm guilty of being a dwarf and I've been on trial my entire life. And I just love that that part of his speech. That was great.
Yeah.
And it seems like that is a lot of what his issues have stemmed from constantly with people disliking him, making fun of him, laughing at him. Various things like we saw during Joffrey's wedding, the mocking of him because of him being a dwarf and the way that all those different riders came out as dwarfs just to mock him. So, yeah, it just seems like that's constantly something he's had to deal with in his life.
And that's what it is. I mean, dwarves in this world pretty much are just comic relief.
That's what I was thinking. It's kind of sad. I don't know how much of that speech he really had. I mean, I'm sure a lot of that was pure passion about just how he felt being a dwarf in general in this world and in our world, you know, as well.
Well, what's wonderful is that, I mean, look at Peter Dinklage being the most badass person in the entire world. So, I mean, at the end of the day, regardless of the social connotations, be it in this world or that world, you're watching an incredible performer with a very powerful performance finally kind of give it to people who really deserve it. So it was kind of a hurrah moment. I'm terrified for next week because I have no idea. I don't know. It's one of those things. This show, you just don't know. They would kill him if they'll kill him if they need to, and I will just not be okay if that happens.
Yeah, that's what's great about the show is you really don't know. But speaking on that too, since he demands trial by combat. Who do you guys think is going to be his champion? Do you think it's going to be Braun? Do you think it's going to be some other character? What do you think?
Well, are you saying that he's going to be able to name someone to fight for him?
Well, that's how we saw it work at the Eyrie.
Yeah, so is that the only time we've seen trial by combat in the show?
I think so. I think it was at the Eyrie and that was it.
Yeah. And I have a question. As just viewers, did you, when he said trial by combat, were you like, huh? Or did you remember?
I remembered,
but I kind of felt like the crowd with their, how they heard it and the reaction, I feel like everyone was shocked. And I mean, I was kind of as well, but it's like, is he going to nominate someone? Are they going to allow him to do that? I guess. I don't know. Or would they make him fight for himself? Because I obviously feel like he's going to probably say a name, but I feel like Jamie would step forward and fight for him.
Well, I'll say, like, in the previous episode, Braun said he would do it.
Yeah.
And then he was able to name Braun after Braun said he would do it for him.
I think what happens is you declare trial by combat, the prosecuting team, or the prosecuting, like Queen Cersei, I believe, because she's the one bringing the charges, she declares a champion first. And then Tyrion can either say, I'll fight, or he can declare a champion of his own.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Well,
I think
then
that's
Cersei
how.
Could, I guess.
What if they both want Jamie to fight Jamie?
She could definitely say Jamie, and then.
But come on, do you really want Jamie as your champion? The dude's got one hand, right?
Of course.
But in that situation, if Jamie was fighting somebody who was representing Tyrion, it's like he doesn't want his brother to die. So in that case, is he just going to lay his neck on the line and die for his brother? Or what's going to happen?
Sinfire on the chat, by the way, pointing out the Hound and Beric had a trial by combat as well. I'm not sure if it worked the same way as the normal laws, but they did have that in the previous episodes.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
But, who do you guys think then, given there's two champions, who do you think we might see as the champions?
Jamie, for sure, is one of them.
I think so. I mean, just as from a story standpoint, that would make it very interesting and make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I honestly hope so. I mean, I don't obviously want Jamie to die, but I just feel like if it's someone we don't know, and even Bronn we haven't seen lately, so we might not feel as like the scene or the battle is so important if it's not a character we really care about who's fighting. So I definitely hope that Jamie's one of them, and I feel like he will be.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Lord Bond on the chat saying left-handed Jamie, no way. Two-handed Jamie, definitely. So
that's fair. I mean, that's the only reason I'm not saying, like, I bet all my money on Jamie being one, because the people who would nominate him, the thing is, because he only has his left hand now, who would be dumb enough to say, like, yeah, the person who lost their fighting hand, that's the person I want to. Like,
that's a good point.
As a story device, it'd be awesome, but at the same time, who would do that?
Yeah. So if Tyrion loses the trial by combat, his chance of joining the Night's Watch is gone completely, right?
That's...
The only way it would work is if Tyrion asked him to do it, because then Cersei would have to deal with either losing...
Or nominating someone he could beat.
Well, that's the thing, is she would have to choose between Jaime or Tyrion if that were the case.
Yeah.
Because if he said, oh, Jaime has to fight for me, then she'd have to watch either the person that she loves die that way.
Yeah, or she'd nominate
someone. So that could work.
Well, I just feel like, why are we watching Jaime get to, like, basically learn how to fight with his left hand? Like, they've been focusing on that so much. Mm-hmm. We keep seeing him standing by in, like, armor, like, as if he's prepared to fight. I just feel like they've been focusing on it so much, him learning his skills again as fighting, that it's, like, maybe preparation for something.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. But I guess we'll find out hopefully next episode.
I know, it's like,
But I love that point that you brought up about if he nominates Jamie,
then Cersei loses, no matter what, because either she loses the trial or she loses the love of her life, I suppose.
Right.
Oh, and to answer your question, by the way, because this was something that we found out during the Eyrie about what happens if his champion loses, that means he's guilty. So that's what it is. If his champion loses, he's guilty. If his champion wins, he's innocent.
Okay.
So if he's, and now that he's not at this point too, as far as going to the wall, that would be if he confessed his. I don't know. They never really said it because then he if he's guilty, he's guilty anyway. So yeah, I don't know. I guess we'll find out with that.
Yeah, I have blah 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 blah. I have to assume that if you lose the combat by trial, that you have no other choice. It's death.
Then
right, because then maybe there's no redeeming factor, whereas if you confess, there's some redeeming factor to it,
I guess so.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess
Westeros
we will
law.
Find out. So, yeah, so with that said, though, that'll wrap up this episode. So, guys, thank you so much for joining us this week. And once again, I'm Dave Klein. You can find me on Twitter at TheDaveKlein. That is K-L-E-I-N.
And I am Autumn Chiklis. You can find me on Twitter at Autumn Chiklis.
I'm Kristen Snyder. You can follow me at Cinematic Escape, or you can check out my blog, Cinematic Escape.
And I'm Kyle Maddock. You can find me on Twitter at Mad Canard, like the duck.
All right, and we will see you guys next week. Bye.
From executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz you later.
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.